I want you to open to the Old Testament book of Daniel. Daniel. When I say Daniel, what do you quickly think of? Daniel and? The Lion's Den. I love that story. One of the early stories from Sunday school I remember. When I was in Sunday school, we had the flannel graph boards. Remember those, some of you? And you cut out the people, and you could, like, if you were really good, the teacher would let you come and get the cutout of Daniel and put it on, but that's not the one I wanted. I wanted the lions. And I remember the day that I was a pastor's son, so I answered the right question because I knew it. And she's like, okay, Ronnie House, you come up and put one of the lions in the den. So I took the lion. You know, you're supposed to put him, like, off to the side because Daniel's safe. I put the lion, like, I went, roar, and I put him right on top of Daniel's head. And she was like, that is not how the story goes. I was like, but it's so much more exciting that way. Daniel, I guess I should turn there also. Daniel, as we turn to Daniel, interesting, the books of the Bible cover so many different time periods. And when you turn to Daniel, you're turning to an interesting time in Jewish history. The Jews, we know, after Moses had come into the Promised Land, we looked at that. They had set up their land in what is today Israel, and in fact today, what is even today Jordan and parts of Syria. But that history was not always like that. Hundreds of years after David and Solomon, the kingdoms were taken over by other countries. And the southern kingdom, where today Jerusalem is, and cities like even Jericho, those cities comprise the part of territory we call in the Old Testament Judah, the southern territories. And they were taken over by a king named Nebuchadnezzar, who came in and killed off a lot of the people, destroyed Jerusalem, burned the temple, destroyed the city gates, and everyone he didn't kill, if they were young enough to make the journey, they put them in chains, they put a hook through the king's nose, and they marched them across the desert about 800 miles to make them slaves in what is today around the area of Iraq, in old Babylon. When you open to Daniel, this book takes place during that period. They're not in Israel. They're not going to the temple daily to worship Jehovah. In fact, that's so long in the past for some of them. Some of the young ones have been born and have never even seen Jerusalem or the temple. And it will be during this time, even in history, that we will have the beginning of the system of, like, the synagogues. Some people wonder, where did that come from? Because it's not in the Old Testament. It was during this time that the Jews couldn't go to Jerusalem or to the temple, that they wanted to keep learning alive in their Jewish community. And so they began meeting in houses of worship to read the scriptures and the Torah. And that was where the whole concept of the synagogues began, back here in Babylon and during that captivity. Well, we start today. Daniel is a young man. He's one of the young men that they drug across the desert from Israel. And he's living here. And we're going to begin with chapter 1. We're not reading about the lions tonight. It says, it was in the third year of the reign of Jehoiakim of Judah that Nebuchadnezzar, the king of Babylon, came to Jerusalem and besieged it. And the Lord gave Jehoiakim, the king of Judah, into the hand and some of the articles of the house of God, which he carried into the land of Shinar, to the house of his God. And he brought the articles into the treasure of his God. It's going on, it's describing what happened as they left Jerusalem. And they took things out of the temple back with them to Babylon. Verse 3. Then the king instructed Ashpenaz, the master of his eunuchs, to bring some of the children of Israel and some of the king's descendants and some of the nobles, young men in whom there was no blemish, good-looking men, gifted in wisdom, possessing knowledge, quick to understand, who had ability to serve in the king's palace, and whom they might teach the language and the literature of the Chaldeans. Very interesting. Look up for a moment. This is something the Persians did as that not many other subjugating people did, and they were actually really smart on it. Many times when an army would come in, let's say I'm from this land, and I come into your land, and I'm powerful enough to overtake you, I kill as many as I have to eliminate my threat, and then I just want you to pay taxes. Give me money. Give me some of your food that you're raising, and then I'm happy. Invariably, this never worked, because as soon as they got enough strong people again, or this guy got weak, they overthrew. The Persians, and they start this thing where they're like, we've just brought thousands and thousands of people into our cities. This could cause some serious unrest as the years go. So one of the things we're going to do to try to stop that is that we are going to take some of their finest, some of their youngest and their brightest, some of their people that came from the noble families, some of the people who are leaders in their community, and we are going to train them. We are going to wine them, we're going to dine them, we are going to teach them, we are going to let them imbibe of our culture. And you know what they're doing? If they can get those leaders in that community to vest into their government and their kingdom, they will spread that around their community. And actually the Persians became quite successful at that. That whole concept of, let's not just subjugate you and make you slaves, but let's try to be smart and bring you a part of our culture. So much to the point that years later, when some of the slaves or former Hebrews begin to go back to Israel, many of them stayed. Many of them had set up wonderful lives over there in Babylon. They had set up businesses. They had flourished. They were in the government. And many, many stayed. But we're reading now about these young men. He's looking. So they're looking at them like, yeah, put that one. I've heard there's a real good guy living over in that camp. Bring them. So let's go down to verse 5. What does he do? He appoints for them a daily provision of the king's delicacies and of the wine which he drank, and 3 years of training for them, so that at the end of that time, then they were ready to serve before the king. Now, from among those of the sons of Judah were Daniel, Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah. Now, you might not recognize all those names. You'll recognize them in the next verse. To them, the chiefs of the eunuchs, he gave them new names. Those were their Hebrew names. He gave them new names that in their language actually represented various gods that they worshipped. And here were their new names. Daniel is now called Belshazzar. Hananiah is Shadrach. Mishael is Meshach. And Azariah becomes Abednego. That's where they come from. Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. But look at verse 8, and here's where the crux of the message begins tonight. But Daniel purposed in his heart that he would not defile himself with the portion of the king's delicacies, nor with the wine which he drank, and therefore he requested of the chief of the eunuchs that he might not defile himself. We're going to look at a little bit more, but you can kind of pause right here. This is interesting. Daniel, I don't know him, but you can already see, this is a pretty big man. He might be young. But imagine you have been brought, you watched probably your father and your uncles killed. You watched your mother and your sisters brought as slaves across the desert. Many people probably didn't make the trek. You've been here now only for a matter of months, and suddenly you are brought before the king. And you're not brought before the king to be executed. You're surprised as you go before him. You're finding yourself with some of your best friends and the strongest and the brightest. And the king says, guess what? For 3 years, we're going to groom you. We're going to put you on a workout regimen. We're going to put you on a special diet. You are going to live right here on the palace compound with us. And after 3 years, if you passed all this, you're going to get to work here in the government with me. I mean, wow, what an opportunity. And I can imagine all these men as they've assembled there that day, like, wow. I mean, they're just like glowing. They're like, oh, but this is never what I would have imagined months ago. And then all of a sudden, the guy in charge of the eunuchs is like, do you all understand? And then in the back, is that a hand? Yes, sir, it is. Yes. Do you not understand something? I don't want to defile myself with your food and your drink. I mean, I don't know that it really played out that way, but anyway it played out, this is a pretty bold guy here to do this. Now, here was the issue with Daniel. Daniel obviously must have been a deeply religious young man. He knew the laws of Moses. Someone had taught him, a Sunday school teacher, a father, a mother, a grandma, someone. And this young boy thought, I'm no longer living in my hometown. I'm no longer living with my family. But I have convictions that I hold, that I live by, that shape my life. And even though this may seem like a great opportunity, and even though everyone else is doing it around me, I have convictions that steer my life, and this isn't congruent with what they are. Talking tonight about this idea of, do we live by convictions? It's not even a popular word anymore. You know what I mean? Have you heard someone use it recently? Oh, really? Does it offend your convictions? We don't even ask that kind of stuff. You know what I mean? What is the idea, the biblical idea, concept of convictions? They are those deeply held personal values that you have. Some are things that you believe you should do. Other convictions are deeply seated ideas of what you don't think you should do, of how you should respond, of how you should not respond. For us as Christians, we believe that they are rooted in Scripture and in the revelation of God's character and our need to emulate as followers of Jesus Christ the example and the life of Jesus. Those are our convictions. It's not a heavy word. It's not, what did you do? Are you under conviction? It's not that concept. It's a very freeing concept to say, my life isn't aimless. I'm not just pushed around by whatever comes and whatever person I meet and what group of friends I fall into and what church I start going to, but I have these deep-seated beliefs about who God is and what God expects of my life and my character. And that guides me through life in how I respond to opportunities, in the kind of people I befriend, in the kind of people I date, in the way in which I play out my life. I'm rooted and grounded in these convictions. We need more Daniels. We need more people who would say, you know what? Before I just say, yeah, that's great, that's wonderful, she's hot, he's whatever. My first thing is, wait a minute, inside, I have a value system that this has to be checked up against. And if it doesn't match, then it's not a match for me. Daniel says, I'm sorry, got a problem here. I want to examine several things about, just quickly, about his convictions. The first one is almost synonymous with it, but it's this, that Daniel lived by principles. Now, before you quickly say, I do too, we do too, let's just say someone, where did this happen once? I was at a retreat or something, they made us do this exercise. They said, okay, they give you a blank sheet of paper, and they say, this is going to be passed down to your son, your daughter, your grandson, or if you have a good friend that's young, a niece or nephew. Write down the rules you live by. And I remember when I did that, I mean, you know, opinionated me. I thought, oh, okay, here we go, you know. I start writing, and then I start reading back, and I'm like, well, that one's not really important, you know. Peanut butter and jelly every day, I'll cross that one off. I'm not kidding. And I really started wrestling, wow, if I had to boil down, what are the principles I live by? What do I say, this has to be a part of my character, and this should not be a part of my character? I found it rather a difficult experience. But I wonder, how well do we know what are the principles that guide our life? Now, I want to be careful because one of the things I think the church has gone wrong is when a preacher or a denomination said, here are the convictions everyone must have. And you must all think that this is right, and you must all believe that what I think is wrong is wrong. I don't believe that. I believe there are some convictions that we should all hold and probably all do. There will be many convictions in your life that someone else may not share exactly. That's all right. It's your conviction. You stand firm to it. But have them. Daniel had a principle, and he was so prepared that when he came, he said, this doesn't match. Now, he couldn't drink the same wine. He couldn't eat the same food. But he doesn't get belligerent. We're going to look further how he goes. But I want to go to this next point. You have your principles, but here's where some start faltering. Secondly was, he had courage about those things. Warning Americans, there's a lot of peer pressure to not stick and abide to your convictions. I've talked about this so many times with friends, some of it may go back to those instincts in us as herd animals to all want to do the same thing. Cluck, 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 we're all going this way. Why is that clucking over there? You know, we just all move the same way. Well, we are no longer, you know, moving around the cluck-clucks, but still as humans, wow, what a powerful tendency that is to all want to just kind of do the same thing. We call it mass hysteria. I have been in meetings where I'm like, this cannot possibly be happening. I won't give examples. I could, but I don't want to bash on people's religious experiences. But just, we're mass hysteria. What does it take for you to be courageous to say, that's not for me? We were at Judy's party on Friday night, and they started playing the music, and we got out, and we were dancing, and I was dancing with Judy, and I think I mentioned to her, I said, you know, for most of my life, I couldn't dance. My church didn't allow dancing. It was wrong. That was not my conviction. It was the conviction of our church and said, you got to live by these convictions. So I never did until just several years ago. And some people are like, I saw you dancing. We can tell. But I remembered a story that night as we were dancing. I thought, when I was in third grade, and all you educators, I don't know if they do this anymore, there was something, I don't even know what it was because I couldn't participate in it, but it had something to do with green sleeves. The Maypole or something. And I remember that day, you know, with all the parents knew what we were going to do. We came to school, and all the kids in my class, third grade class, Miss Warren, we went up to the stage in the gymnasium, and they'd set up a pole. And I remember all these kids had crepe paper or something. And they were like, I don't know, marching around the pole with crepe paper. I couldn't do it because I was dancing. And I was celebrating some day that wasn't a Christian thing. And so I had to bring a note from home saying, we are Pentecostals and we do not believe in dancing, so please excuse Ronnie from the dance today. And I had to sit on the bleachers with the little Jehovah Witness girl. Oh no, we didn't sit together because she was Jehovah Witness and I was Pentecostal. We looked at each other, but we were on the same bleachers just watching all our kids have fun. And I look back at that now and I'm like, what a pathetic little thing that I couldn't, you know, walk around the pole with the crepe paper. But I'll tell you one thing I've often thought back in my life at that moment and actually been appreciative of. That early on, I did learn something about the way I was raised as a Christian. That there were going to be times that I was different than the dominant culture around me. That there was a different set of rules that I lived by. I didn't necessarily agree with that rule then. I still don't agree with it. But I did learn, sitting on the bleachers in third grade, a powerful feeling that I'm not just like everybody else. We have ways we do things according to our belief system that differ. And that didn't stop there. It was many times throughout my life, whether it was my high school prom or couldn't go here, couldn't do that. But it got easier and easier as I got older to know, say, I'm a Christian. We don't do that. I'm not trying to tell you you can't, not trying to tell you shouldn't, but I live differently. And I fear that some of us struggle with that. I watch Christians that it's hard for them to go against the crowd and say, I don't do that. Why aren't you old folks? Doesn't matter. It's not something I want to do. We've got to learn to be able to be courageous enough, like Daniel, to say to opportunities and people and friends and family, I have reasons, but I would rather not. Or no, I won't pursue that. No, I won't be going out with him again. No, I won't be pursuing. Why? Because there's things in my life that it doesn't match up with my convictions. They're mine. But it is how I live. I faced this recently. I went to a concert up in L.A. just a couple weeks ago and was meeting up with a bunch of my friends. And so they texted, like, are you almost here? I said, yeah, should we meet down at the entrance to whatever that place was? And they said, oh, no, we're at the back of the car. We're having a tailgate party. I'm like, fun. Where are you guys? Let's go. And they're like, now, what do they say? This is all texting. Not while I'm driving, of course. But they texted like, oh, we got, I forget even what they called, but they said something, but basically it came out, well, we're all getting high. You do that, do you? And I responded, said, no, I don't actually. What? And then I got a phone call. Come on. You're telling me you've never gotten high. Well, dude, this is going to be so much fun. We're going to, I don't know why I talk like that when I'm talking about getting high. And I went, and I'll tell you what, it's been a lot of years that I felt peer pressure, but I felt peer pressure. Now, listen, I'm not trying to say you shouldn't smoke dope. It's my personal convictions for a reason I've actually talked about here before, of wanting to stay away from things because of my tendency to like things, you know, that I probably shouldn't like as much. So I said to drugs for me, no, it's a conviction I have, not going there, not doing it. If you do it, that's your thing. It's not my thing. But all my friends are like, come on. And I mean, I couldn't understand. I felt like I was in third grade. Again, I'm like, why is this such a big deal to you guys? Drop it. Come on. And I thought of this, but you know what? Just stick to your conviction. It's how I live. I'm not trying. Well, why? You started. I said, I'm not trying to say anything about it. I'm just saying I'm not doing it. But I was surprised at my young age how there was that moment of difficulty of just wanting to say, okay, fine, let's do what everybody's doing. This is not comfortable. And then the part of me that says, stand by what you live by. People, it's one thing to be in church and say, I have a conviction. It's another thing to be at work and to live by it. It's one thing to say, this is how I live. That when I'm dating, these things need to happen before I begin to come into this kind of relationship with this person. It's another thing when it's like, wow, I'm just overwhelmed right now by the environment and by the two glasses of wine we've had. Where are your convictions, and do you have the courage to stand by them. 3, I see this in Daniel. Not only did he live by principles and he had courage, but I love that they're coupled with this great faith in who God is. Read on real quickly here. He goes and he says, I'm not going to do it. I'm not going to defile myself. Now God had brought Daniel, verse 9, into the favor and the goodwill of the chief of the eunuchs. And the chief of the eunuchs said to Daniel, well, Daniel, I mean, I hear your problems, but you're putting me in an awkward place because I fear that my lord, the king, who has appointed your food, he's picked out your diet and drink, that he's going to look at you guys at the end of this and see that your faces are worse off than the young men of your age who went along with the program. And Daniel, I got to be honest, not only does that endanger you, but that endangers me. Daniel said to the steward, he said, please test your servants for 10 days. Let them give us vegetables only to eat and water to drink. And then let our appearances be examined before you and the appearance of the young men who are on the king's diet. And then do as you see fit. I love that faith. He doesn't know. I mean, come on, these other guys have everything they could have before them, the best of the food. And he says, you know what? I have principles, I have the courage to say that I want to live by them, and I have enough faith to believe that God is going to honor me for standing by my convictions, and that I'm not going to lose this, and this is not going to bring me about to a worse place in my life. I have faith in God that if I stand by my convictions, I will get to a good place in my life. He says, test us. Just try it. 10 days. Water and vegetables. At the end of the 10 days, let's read for a minute. Verse 15, at the end of 10 days, their features appeared better and fatter than all the young men who ate the portion of the king's delicacies. And so the steward took away their portion of delicacies and the wine, and he just gave them the vegetables. Wow. I tell you, you've got to come to the place in your life where you believe that if you have those convictions about how you live, that even when they're tested and even when they seem like they might interfere with something you really want, a goal you've really been pursuing, have faith that if you live by them, God will honor you. We're such pragmatists in our culture, and it's easy to say, I have a conviction that I don't want to do this, but you know, if I do just fudge a little bit on these reports, I might get that promotion, and then I won't do that again. But this is what I've been trying to get into this place. Don't do that. Don't exaggerate or lie on the resume. You don't need to break your convictions for God to bless you. If anything, it will come back and cause problems in your life. There's such a freedom to say, this is what I believe to be right or wrong. I'm going to live by it, and I'm going to trust God enough to take me where I need to go. People, I can't tell you as a pastor how many people I have counseled in horrible situations who ended up uniting their lives with someone in marriage or in a domestic partnership, who they broke their convictions even going to that place with that person. But they wanted that relationship, but they wanted to be married, but they wanted somebody. And the pain that it eventually brought them. If you have convictions, believe that God is God enough to honor them and to bless your life even when you stand against the crowd. Lastly, and I'll leave it on this, and here's the balance to all this thing about living by convictions, humility. I don't know how he did it. Excuse me, sir. Can I talk with you for a moment? But notice this whole thing was he asks permission. He says he's purposed in his heart that he doesn't want to do this. But he asks the guy in charge, can we try another course? Would you mind looking back at us and seeing how it is? It is not this arrogant attitude of, huh, I would never do that. Can't believe you'd do that. We are the people of God, and we don't act like that. I don't care. That's my conviction. This is where so many Christians have gotten such a bad name. We've had convictions, but we've made this arrogant thing out of them where we stick them in everybody else's face. We don't do that. I was walking recently this summer. I was up in San Francisco, and we were walking with some family along a street, and there were some I have a hard time even calling them Christians. I'm guessing that they profess to be followers of Jesus. And they had all these signs. And they were like house-painted signs. These were like professionally printed. They were like really nice. But they were professionally printed, but they said the most ghastly things, like, God hates homosexuals and stuff. I mean, they were saying this kind of stuff. And I thought, well, why not? You have some nerve doing this on market in San Francisco. But hey. But I remember going up to one and just looking at them with incredulity, be like, are you serious? Are you, like on Sunday night, really? Really? I mean, is this the idea? You can have a conviction, but to pass it off in arrogance is not the way of a follower of Jesus Christ. When people at your family reunions talk about something and you dismiss yourself because it's turned into a big gossip fest and that's not what you're about. And they say, hey, why are you leaving? You don't have to turn around because you're all gossiping and I don't do that. Well, that's the way to, you know, love your family. They're going to really like it. No, it's not about an arrogant response. If we would learn as Christians once again to, yes, live by principle, be courageous enough to stick to them, have faith that God will honor our lives, even if it's a long way about, but live them out in humility so that people are not offended by them. They never feel patronized. They never feel put down. They never feel like you're Mr. Holy and Miss Holy and so much better. That's never the attitude we give off, but one of humility. That yes, it's not the way I live. Please understand it. I think we would have such a powerful effect. And that's what happens. That humility, God, Daniel, if you read on, I don't have time now. He goes on. He goes through those 3 years sticking to his system. And at the end of living courageously faithful in his principles, he is promoted to one of the most powerful men in the land. God honors him. And he was a blessing to others because of his humble lifestyle. What are some of the things that happen in our lives? God's protection when we live by our convictions. You know the story about Daniel. You know the story about Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. Living their convictions. And even when it got them in trouble, did not God protect them? I got to give you one little secret. When you don't live by your convictions, and when you compromise those, you take yourself out underneath that protective covering of God. And then we wonder why all that junk happened to us. Because we made those wrong decisions and consequences followed. 2, will it always be good? No. Convictions will bring you pain and testings, like they did everyone in the Bible. But it will also bring you blessing, promotion. You'll see God working through your life to touch others when you live by those convictions that you hold. Let's bow our heads. God, thank you tonight for the work of your Holy Spirit in our lives. It's very individual, but you come in each of our lives and you breathe through us so many times throughout a day in that quiet little way. That's not how you should respond. That's not what you should do. That God, would you help us to realize that those are those things you've given to orient our lives. Help us to live by those convictions. To be people of principle, not of convenience. Tonight, Lord, turn the light of your word onto our lives individually and show us where those areas are where we need to kind of come back on track and be people of conviction. We thank you. We ask it in Jesus' name. Amen.